Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Virtual Real Estate Investing Podcast. I am your host, Frank Scappaticci. Today, I'm going to be doing a solo episode without my partner, John, and I'm going to talk about, I'm going to give some updates on my most recent trip doing due diligence on a self-storage facility in Spartanburg, South Carolina. I'm going to talk about our current deal that we secured and how that's going. We're stabilizing an asset in Oklahoma. I want to talk about that. And I'm going to share a lesson that we are learning in our business. And that lesson is, how do you create a business that operates more like a conveyor belt and less like a tangled ball of yarn? I think we're maturing our storage business, particularly the acquisitions process and the funding process. And I feel like we've been operating a little bit of a chaotic, asynchronous operation, and we're starting to get closer to turning it into a conveyor belt or an assembly line. So I'll talk about that. But first, updates regarding our most recent acquisition. So we had a self-storage facility under contract in Spartanburg. We still do. And I flew down there and had a great trip. Spartanburg, South Carolina, underrated barbecue. It's also the home of Denny's headquarters, which I thought that was funny, but I did. But I went down there. We had a facility under contract for just over $1 million. It's all climate control. I felt super, super pumped about it. And I went down there and I learned that even though in self-storage, your tenants are probably not as important to the asset value as maybe a strip mall or some type of triple net lease, right? Your tenants are, you know, they're month to month essentially. And each tenant's bringing on average between $80 and $100 a month. Obviously not as valuable to your business as an anchor tenant in a mall, right? But you still need to underwrite the rent roll. Who's on the rent roll? What do you see? And confirm the seller's numbers, occupancy, their revenue, the unit mix, all that stuff. And this is what happened. So I went down there and physically the facility was amazing. Excellent condition. Like it's in the middle of nowhere, not in the best location, but the actual physical facility was really, really, really in great shape. There was very, very little deferred maintenance. There was also 2 acres of land next door that was part of the property that can be used for RV storage. It's not being used at all, right? Big, big opportunity. But the problem I found was when I looked at their rent roll, I noticed that 10% of the facility was being rented out to one customer. And I was like, wow, that's pretty odd for a self-storage facility to have 10% of the entire facility rented to one guy or gal. And when I asked about it during the walkthrough, I learned that it was actually the seller's the seller's wife. And what does that mean? In this particular case, it means their occupancy was, in my opinion, 10% overestimated. And being that my primary concern with the facility was the physical location and foot traffic, this scared me away a little bit. So right now we're in the process of going through a renegotiation because the risk in this facility, in my opinion, just went up, and I feel like I can't trust those numbers. I also felt like the facility was in a tough location. In order to get to the facility from the main part of town, you had to pass by a couple other facilities. And on the other side of the facility, there's not a lot of housing. So I felt like there's a big disadvantage in terms of location. And I think in rural markets or less populated areas, you really, really have to consider that. So for those reasons, we might lose that deal. Hopefully we don't, but we just can't take too much risk on. So we have to drop price. Anyway, so that's what we got going on there on our acquisition side. We also locked up 2 more facilities on Saturday. So we are still very, very much in the early part of our due diligence on those, but we did lock up 2 more facilities in Lawton, Oklahoma, which is also the location of our first facility. And to give an update on that one's going really, really well. I wrote an investor update this morning. We're actually already on track to hit our revenue targets for year one. We projected that we would add between 2 to 4 customers to our occupancy each month. And we actually are already at that number. We raised prices already. So that investment's killing it. We also automated the onboarding of customers at that facility and reduced the on-site staff. They used to have 40 hours of staff a week. And now we actually are only paying for like 2 to 6 hours a week. So that's a big, big saving on expenses. Super, super pumped about that. Okay. So I'm going to get to the lesson. Like, what is the lesson I'm trying to communicate? I mentioned before that you want your business to eventually operate like a conveyor belt or an assembly line and not like a ball of yarn. We were definitely in our business operating a confusing process. We lost the deal in Little Rock, Arkansas, and it was a good deal. But the problem was we signed up for a 60-day close on a self-storage facility, and 60 days sounds like a lot of time, but if you're in a new location and you have to get a new lender and you're a little bit young as a company, like our company is, at least on the storage side, 60 days is not a lot of time. So what ended up happening was we get the deal under contract and we started doing everything almost all at once. We started doing due diligence and collecting information from the brokers. We're reaching out to our lender, or in this case, a mortgage broker, and we're starting to raise money all at the same time, right? And what ended up happening was we got through the due diligence part, it's going fine. We raised a bunch of LP or investor money. We raised hundreds of thousands of dollars. I think the total raise was like 600 grand. We were more than halfway there within 3 weeks or so. And we also were going through the process of identifying our long-term lender. And what happened was the lender changed the terms on us, or changed, we didn't get the terms we expected, right? We were expecting to get 70% approximate LTV at like a low 4% interest rate with no prepayment penalties on a 20-year note. That's generally what we thought we were going to get, with the hopes we would get interest-only payments for the first year or 6 months. And the lender, a couple weeks into this deal, after we had already raised a bunch of money, gave us a 55% loan to value, and that screwed up our returns. And it forced us to go back to the agent and say, hey, we either need to extend the contract because there's no way we're going to be able to go to a new lender and close on time, right? Lenders take about 45 days to close, and we were already 3 or 4 weeks into the deal. So there's no way we're going to close on time going to a new lender, right? And then the seller refused, and then we have to go back to our investors and say, hey, we lost the deal, right? That sucks. I think our investors understood the change in the terms would have dropped their IRR or their returns or ROI significantly. So we couldn't accept those terms from the bank. So our options then were to drop our promote or our share of the deal and or renegotiate. And we tried both, and they both did not work out. So it kind of felt like an egg on face. Like we had to go back to our investors and say, hey guys, this deal's not going to work out. And it sucks because some of them probably earmarked some funds, moved it over to a separate checking account, and it didn't work out. So that stinks. But why did we fail, right? Why did we fail? Well, one, I don't think we gave ourselves enough time. I think the lesson for us is until we get this machine extremely well-oiled, a 75-day to 90-day close is more appropriate for us, right? That way we have 2 weeks or so to get the bank financing or the main part of the financing down and more solid before we start going out there and raising capital and flying out to all these sites and getting all that stuff done, right? And that goes to my point. That sounds more like an assembly line than our previous process, which I called a tangled ball of yarn, right? You get the contract. You start collecting due diligence materials from the seller or the broker. You review the due diligence. You, at that point, already should have sent messages out to your lender, or if you're using a broker, you've given all the materials and the underwriting docs and all that stuff about yourself to that broker so they can go shop for you and get a loan, right? Hopefully within 2 weeks after that, you get a term sheet or maybe some type of preliminary agreement with the lender. So you generally know where they're going to be at, right? That way, you know how much they're going to loan, how much money you got to raise. And that also will help you shape your investor materials or pitch deck and help you really get more clarity on what returns can they expect, what terms can you offer them, right? Until the main part of the financing is done, that stuff is, it's not concrete, right? It's not solid. So allow that stuff to happen more in sequence. And that also what that does is it allows you to take a breath. The process we were managing for the other two deals that I mentioned before, the one at Spartanburg and the one in Little Rock, we just were hustling constantly because we put ourselves under the gun. And I feel like that also, not only does it stress you, but I think it probably does increase the chances that you do make a mistake or overlook something. So I guess until you're perfect or until you're really, really dialed in, give yourself time to think. And then I'll share one other observation I've had. This is a bonus tip for people in sweaty businesses. Every facility we've looked at to date in person that we've done due diligence on, we believe that the owner was operating a storage business and or they were operating a storage business, but they were managing it like an Airbnb. What do you mean by that? What does Frank mean? Well, like these owners would have these facilities in the middle of nowhere, right? And a lot of these areas are in lower income areas, right? So, you know, that's something, but they would keep these places in unnecessarily amazing condition. They would staff it with 40 hours of on-site customer support. They would spend all this money on like signage and all this stuff, right? And they would freak out if customers had any type of complaint or any issue or whatsoever, right? But I think what they fail to appreciate is like in an Airbnb business, you get rewarded by having really, really top of the line amenities and an amazing customer experience, right? In sweaty businesses like self-storage, trucking companies, like a vending machine business, a laundromat, like the business is valued off of its cash flow, right? And I think in some cases, people in these sweaty businesses are overspending on customer experience when it's completely unnecessary, right? Like examples for storage, right? Taking cash payments because your customers want to pay cash. You don't need that customer that wants to pay cash, right? That's it. That person paying cash is making you keep more customer support on your books and making you incur expenses, and you simply don't need that customer. That customer complains, just let them go, right? There's another one that's willing to pay card or credit right behind them, okay? Like having a trucking company where you spend a ton of money on like painting the trucks and your logos and your branding, right? I mean, yeah, if you're converting that into good marketing, great, but you don't need them on the trucks, right? So what I'm getting at is if you own a sweaty business, like pull the levers that generate cash flow and limit expenses, and maybe that's enough, right? You're not operating an Airbnb. These sweaty companies, they don't need to have products that are that nice, right? People just want to use your commodity or your service, get in, get out. So focus on getting that done. Because when you increase your operating income, you increase the asset's value, and that's how you make big, big returns. That's what I got today. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Frank Scat with two P's. And I hope you guys have a great week. Thanks.